Hello, and welcome to MOR.
Hello.
The
Hello.
Underground Subcast.
Sponsored
wait,
by Subway.
Wait.
Hello.
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 There you are.
And welcome to MOR, the Underground Subcast. This week, we are inviting our new friend, Michael Drybra, out of the Birmingham, UK area. And he'll be joining us here in just a moment. We are going to kick things off this week with an Indiana native, Mr. Andy Greenwell, with his song, Molly. Welcome to MOR. This is our guest, Michael Drybra, and you are located in the Birmingham area, is that correct, of the UK?
Birmingham.
Just outside Birmingham, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time. We do appreciate it. Just for ourselves, actually, and our listeners, tell us a little bit about not only your podcast, which I know has some music focus to it. You're a comedian as well, I understand. We'd love to learn just kind of your history, what got you to the podcasting point, which also the appeal to music and its history that I know you are very versed on, and then kind of how the comedian aspect plays in.
Okay, so I started playing music when I was 14. Was pretty much just a little met. So, and that was probably the first time I found like a sense of community at high school.
Okay.
Probably very much a little bit of an outsider, didn't really fit in, and then found music and my peers who were into the same kind of stuff, and I was kind of locked in. I was, you know, so that was me, and then that kind of crossed over into like sort of skate punk music going into like the late 90s and early 90s. And the whole time I was skateboarding, so punk music and hip hop kind of went hand in hand with that.
For sure, for sure.
And I played on the sort of open mic circuit as a singer-songwriter, you know, guy in an acoustic guitar singing songs about his ex-girlfriend, bringing the room down, pretty much. Yeah. That was what I was doing.
That's also Ben. Yeah.
Did you cover hip-hop and, songs?
I didn't get that bit. Did I cover what?
Did you cover hip-hop songs as an acoustic artist? That's a big thing here in the States, songwriters covering classic 90s hip-hop.
Not at that point, no. But that kind of came later. So a few years down the line, I was saving up to propose to my then-girlfriend.
Okay.
And she promptly broke up with me. and I had all this money. So I bought myself a loop pedal and started playing around.
They all do that.
creating music with that, and to see how many different kind of dimensions I could bring in. I started off just doing stuff with just me in the acoustic guitar and a microphone. And the first thing I did was a cover of Teardrop by Massive Attack.
Yeah.
And what I tended to do is I would build the rest of the backing track, and the last thing I would drop in would be the thing that made the penny drop with the audience. And that's what got the most amazing reaction, when people realized what it was that they were hearing.
Right.
So it always got me over well with audiences.
Nice.
And then the loop pedal I had multiple inputs.
Okay.
A bit of a slut as pedals go. and so I still had loads of money left over, so I was just, you know what, I've always wanted a bass. So I bought a bass, and then I could add bass lines. And then I was like, you know what, if I got a trigger pad, I could like trigger samples out of my laptop into this thing. So I bought that. And then I ran out of holes, so I bought a mixing desk
and
plugged more stuff into the mixing desk. And I was kind of working on this kind of behind the scenes. No one really knew how far I was taking it. And I entered the local Battle of the Bands just purely as a sort of showcase, just to unveil it. I never intended to try and progress through the competition. And
right.
One of the rules of the heat was you had to have a cover. And I had seen someone on YouTube doing a cover of Rapper's Delight. but they were
absolutely
just laying the bass. Yeah, they were just laying the bass line down so that they could show off and like freestyle sort of solo over the top with their guitar. And I was like, no, I could do something with that.
Right.
So I went out and bought a cowbell. And
I'm already excited.
Man, you wouldn't believe how complicated it is to buy a cowbell. Like, I went to this music shop, and I was like, I want to buy a cowbell. I was like, oh, what pitch do you want? I was like, what?
What pitch?
So you want a signature cowbell or a starter kit?
You want an A-flat, yeah. An A-major, a Dorian cowbell, or a Lydian cowbell?
So he gave me three of his most popular cowbells and sent me into a practice room so I could tap them individually and decide which one. It comes around to the gig, and I was queuing up songs with little comedy samples, and I queued up the Rapper's Delight thing with the Will Ferrell sample of saying,
"More cowbell."
We don't have a whole lot of songs to feature the cowbell. So I beatboxed, tapped the cowbell. And the last thing I drop into the mix is the bass line. And the bass line is the thing that made everyone kind of pop and go, oh my God. But so part of the Battle of the Bands thing was that there was an audience vote element to it, right? And the other biggest band, like locally, had 30 people. And that was a big showing locally for this little small town event. So I sent out a bunch of invites on Facebook, but this was back when that was still a novelty.
Right.
We weren't snowblind to it like we are now. We don't just filter that stuff out.
Right.
So I invited so many people because I thought, well, if 10 of them show up, at least I'll have someone.
For sure.
But they all came. So I had 90 people in this room.
Awesome.
For this unknown band. And bear in mind, I set up all these instruments behind the curtain, and I just put a name forward. So people didn't know that it was just one guy that was going to be coming on stage. So I go out and I do a bunch of songs, and then I'm putting Rapper's Delight together. So I drop the band, and this crowd that I've somehow managed to cultivate goes fucking crazy. And I won the heat, and I got through to the next round.
Nice.
So I was like, so I'm in the next round, and I'm like, okay, so that. So, and I'm not a hip-hop guy in terms of the music that I write, but I was like, okay, so the hip-hop thing went over well. So for the second heat, I did Hey Ya by Outkast.
Yeah.
So I loop everything and put the whole thing together. And it's cardio at this point, putting that thing together in a way that isn't boring. So I'm literally running from one end of the stage to the other to pick up instruments and put that bit in. And that kills it too. So all of a sudden, I'm in the final. And so we're in the final, and the crowd keep coming back. And I've also started picking up other people locally that are coming to see it. And so for the final heat, I basically did a rendition of Jump Around by House of Pain.
Nice.
But I queued each element of the track up with a little sample, kind of like a Chumley Warner kind of 30s instructional video. Now you're going to have to put in the bass. So it's telling me which bit to put in, right? And I get the only thing I couldn't replicate was the squeal. Do you know, incidentally, do you know what that squeal is in Jump Around?
No, what is it?
It's Prince's voice.
Oh. What?
Yeah.
Is it really?
So it's from the beginning of a track called Get Off.
Yes, I can hear it now.
It starts with that squeal.
I absolutely hear it. Get off 22 positions in a one night stand.
You know? Okay.
And by this point, I'm all in. Like I'm actually trying to win this thing. So I have planted breakdancers in the audience.
Nice.
So when the squeal drops, two of them climb on stage, front flip back into the crowd, and some of my supporters have basically snuck in like street party streamers, and they've blown up balloons, and all of a sudden I basically created this whole party atmosphere.
That's amazing.
So I end up winning Battle of the Bands as this one-man band. And there were actually like legit...
Right.
There were legit songs in there as well, so... I recycled some of my old music and created a new song called All Good Things that to this day I'm really proud of, because it's a really nice little acoustic loop, and I wanted to add all these different layers to it. I was like, you know what would really work with this? A glockenspiel. So I bought a glockenspiel.
Lovely.
Absolutely.
So I put this thing together, and I think that was the song that really kind of won people over.
Okay.
Because it's a legit beautiful song.
Okay.
And so one of the judges for Battle of the Bands was he was the sound engineer at another venue in the Midlands that had just had this massive investment and relaunch, and we're getting some big bands. So he actually managed to get me some really good support slots off the back of it.
Okay.
So I was doing that from 2009 up until 2013, and when I got the job that I'm doing now, it was the first job when I really had to like knuckle down and concentrate on what I was by the wayside a little bit. I didn't intend it to, but a year after that, I was kind of a little bit burnt out on just working. So whenever I ran into a friend, they'd be like, "Oh, what you been doing?" I'm like, "Working." So, and I kind of knew I needed something creative to do.
Yeah.
And I'd always fancied having a go at stand-up comedy. And also with the loop pedal thing, I would, if it went wrong, I would just mock myself and not take it too seriously. And I started getting laughs in my chat in between songs.
There you go.
I was maybe a few steps ahead of other people that were starting at the same time. I did my first couple of gigs and I was hooked and I've been doing stand-up ever since.
Okay.
Nice, very man. Cool. I actually, I got a question for you because I really like comedy. I like watching stand-up comedy, specifically like Tom Segura and Bert Kreischer are some of my favorites to watch. And I think something that they're all talking about more now is not as much of how great their sets are, but the most memorable bombs they are, like that they have. Do you have any bombs? And if you don't want to talk about them, we don't have to. But is there any like onstage bombs that are really memorable for you that like helped you grow as a comedian? You know what I mean? Because like that's a lot.
Yeah,
of,
because
yeah,
no, quite often you will learn more from those hell gigs. I've had gigs that are poorly run where you kind of don't care anymore and you just tear into the audience because they're being such dicks. I mean, how bad can my language be on this, by the way, Jay?
As bad as you want.
Who cares? Yeah. Fucking come at us.
Okay,
we're Americans.
Okay, so like, I'll tell you my worst bomb story first.
yes.
So incrementally, like when you start, like when you're a comedian in the UK, at least you start off doing 5 minute sets and then you'll get a 10 minute set. And sometimes that 10 minute set might be on a pro bill, but it'll be unpaid. And then it's a 15 minute set and then you get 20s. So like I'm a couple of years in at this point and I really want to do my first 20. And there's this local promoter company, which is a pair of brothers, and they're lovely guys, but they are spaghetti promoters. Like they just throw shit at the wall to see what sticks. And it's not always the best environment that is conducive to a good gig. So they tell me, okay, you can do this 20. We can do the 20 at this gig. It's on a bank holiday Sunday, but it starts at 5 o'clock. So this is already alarm bells because that's too early in the day for stand-up comedy.
Right.
Really. Like and it's in the summer. So it's still light outside. And comedy needs to be in the dark. So, like, I walk into this pub. I was like, all right, so is it a function room? He's like, no, it's just in the bar. I'm like, all right. So, like, it's daylight is seeping through. And then I'm looking at the crowd that's there, and it's a real mixed bag of, like, ages. Like, and at this point, I only have the 20 minutes that I have. It's not like I can just take stuff out and delve into this bag of tricks to put something that's maybe a bit more palatable for like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So I do my starting bit, which isn't too crass. I'm getting pockets of laughter, but it's not for everyone. But I am ending on a story about buying a sex toy for my mother for Mother's Day.
Not gonna fly. Yeah.
No, it really, really didn't. And there were some like legit pros that were on the bill, and they're just like, really interesting material, mate.
Yeah. Very experimental.
You know, that sort of like, I'm gonna give you an encouraging tone. Like, yeah, well done. You got through it. You know, yeah.
Very brave decisions you made there. Yes.
You know, I mean, look, I had done that set in a legit comedy club late at night in a dark room, and the crowd had been drinking a little bit longer.
Right.
But the grandmothers in the audience did not care.
It's because they didn't get a sex toy for Mother's Day.
Yeah, no, why didn't I get mine?
Right? Yeah.
But, I mean, one of my favorite things is if I get to do a heckle put down.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
So
I've seen comedians that were funnier doing that than doing their actual act.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because I mean, like, there's a spontaneity to it,
right?
Because it's off script, as it were.
You've got to be genuinely funny to come up with that, unless you had a stockpile that you go to. Right?
Russell Peters is like a really well known person that does that a lot. He just tears into crowds as soon as he starts, and he'll just go on as long as it goes for.
Right.
Yeah, but So I'm doing this gig, and it's okay, but there's this one guy who keeps chiming in, like he wishes he could do stand-up, because he's just, anytime there's a gap, he's throwing zingers in there, and a couple of them are landing, so you kind of have to hand it to him. But it kind of, it disrupts your flow. So, like, every time somebody interrupts you, you know, more than 30 seconds, you're instantly doing, like, arithmetic in the back of your head, going, okay, what am I going to need to cut out so that I can finish on time so the promoter books me again? Because if I run over,
right,
that's a mark against your name, depending on the gig and how seriously they are. So this guy is chiming in and chiming in. And I was just like, has anyone got any Canesten or some Vagisil? Anything that might help me deal with an irritating cunt? And it, thankfully, he shut up after that.
Right. That's brilliant.
So, Michael, tell us a little bit about your love for music and this podcast that you host.
Okay, so I originally started Mixtapes with Mike in 2017.
Okay.
I recorded a bunch of the conversations. I wanted to stockpile them so that I could edit them and put them out, so that I would have like a cache of episodes in case I couldn't.
That's what we're doing right now.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Welcome to the cache.
There you go. Which was fine. And then my son was born. And going back to work and doing stand-up, kind of, there wasn't really room to maintain podcast properly at that point. Right. And again, without intending to, it fell by the wayside. And like, once you fall out of the habit of putting episodes out,
right,
you've really got to force yourself back into it. Yeah. Otherwise, you'll just leave it.
You've lost steam.
Yes.
Exactly. So, but then when I got furloughed, when the whole COVID thing started off, like, so for the first month of my furlough, I more or less just ate food. Yeah. I ate like it was Christmas Day every day.
Every day.
Yeah. Same here.
You know, and the weather was nice, you know, like, so like I would be sat in the garden with a glass of wine and my feet in a paddling pool going, this is all right.
Yeah. Could be worse.
And the second month hit and I just started getting a bit bored. I no gigs to do. Like I'm not one for writing jokes in a pad. Like I develop material on stage. I take ideas.
Right.
Do the gig.
Right.
Say them out loud. Add variations from gig to gig. And that's how I sort of work on material. I'm not one for like pen and paper kind of thing. So I was like, you know, maybe I could, I'll start to relaunch Mixtapes. So I started re-recording again and a really good reaction. So basically the premise is the guest comes on and they make a mixtape of 10 tracks without using the same artist twice.
Nice.
And we talk about each song and why they picked it.
Yeah.
And when the episode goes out, I share their mixtape on Spotify and Apple Music in the show notes, basically. So it's because it's not something that people do a lot of these days, making mixtapes and playlists. Right. And I also kind of liken it to, we used to get compilations for free on the front of a magazine, and that doesn't happen anymore because everything's digital.
Right.
So I wanted to kind of bring that back, and it's been really good fun. I'm like 28 episodes in, and I've got stacks of episodes recorded and lots of people booked in this year to talk to. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to talk to people in loads of different subcultures, because music is universal.
Correct.
So I'm talking to artists and skateboarders and snowboarders and TV presenters. And I'm mercilessly taking advantage of the fact that all these creatives are sat at home with nothing to do right now. So they're a little bit more open to agreeing to do something.
Correct.
Or, you know, via Zoom and having a conversation. So I've managed to land some fairly high profile guests so far.
Yes. Awesome.
And the audience is developing and I'm really enjoying it.
Your Instagram layout, real quick, I have to say, is beautiful. You have probably one of the best Instagram walls I've seen, and I follow tons of people on different accounts, and you have an absolutely very well thought out and meticulous Instagram wall. So I have to hats off to you for putting that together.
It's that's developed into a bit of a habit too, because once you start doing something like that, you maintain it. But on the other hand, it's actually fairly economical, because those posts are decided on one day. So yeah. Basically, it's all the album cover work
right.
from the mixtapes that feature in that week's episode. Maybe some you know, personal life stuff is peppered in, like, you know, me and my kid at the park
yeah,
or whatever, so
those,
that
yeah.
people see that I'm not just sharing album
right.
artwork. I'm
right.
a, you know, I am a person.
Right.
And so basically, and I've got to do one tonight because I'm releasing an episode in the morning, and it's all the cover work, and I make a cover with the guest at the beginning of the week, and I do three or four posts a day, but that all those posts are designed in one block image at the beginning of the week, and then I use an app to chop it into the individual posts. If I've got time, I might sort of add video from the conversation to yeah. to a post, because video tends to get decent engagement yeah. And but it means that I don't have to think too hard about what I'm posting, because they're already decided for the day. The most trying thing is writing the captions, because I don't want to just go, here's an album cover. I want
right.
to give a bit of context as
right.
to I tease why it might have been picked, and I put forward as much information about that act that I have to hand, so that it's it gives a little bit more insight rather than just pretty pictures pointing towards a podcast.
Well, and it looks cool because it looks like it's like at a dive bar. Like you walk in and the wall is all littered with like flyers and artwork
like
and
my fridge.
Yeah. And like CD covers of like local artists and stuff. That was the thing. I was like, this is really cool. Like you did a really good job with this. So yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Cause I don't know if many people notice. So I'm just like,
oh yeah.
Cause if I get it's behind tough. With the, doing the posts, like you can tell if I'm behind or doing the post, because the captions get pissier and pissier. Like, blah blah blah. Bigger picture. Here's your image.
It's interesting though. I've noticed. So like I have my own band that I'm usually, well, especially before when I was working from home full time, I was so on social media all the time, and I was always like posting at the right times and keeping everything. But at a certain point, it starts to get a little stagnant. And I've noticed even like taking a small break and coming back, the engagement is way better. Like it, sometimes you might get into like a stalemate of, you know, your content, because of course if you're keeping things branded, there's a lot of things that will become similar. So is there ways that you find yourself picking different content to keep things fresh and always keep things interesting for the people that follow you?
That's the thing. Like I'm having that debate at the minute, because I get caught up in that whole I need to grow my Instagram, but I really don't know how much that translates into people listening to the podcast.
Right, right.
And I can spend a lot of time watching YouTube videos of bouncy girls called Stacy telling you how to do your grid. And
we've all seen it.
I make those
like,
videos.
I, you know, I, and I kind of feel shame, because I go, oh man, I could have edited half a podcast in the time I've spent watching
right,
this
right.
bimbo talking about the algorithm. I try and put in as much video as possible. Because I'm a stand-up and I try and talk to as many stand-ups as possible. And sometimes if the chat is amusing and you can drop in some of that video, then you can end up recycling that into
right.
like reels and stuff like that if it's a real punchy clip.
Right.
The Steph Tolev episode that I put out last year is hands down the funniest laugh out loud episode that I've done, because she's filthy, man. and she didn't realize she'd done it, but as the conversation unfolded, we realized she'd picked mostly bands with band members that she wanted to sleep with.
Good.
And she was very vocal about that.
That's how you relate, man.
Yeah,
yeah, no, it's an interesting space. Yeah, it's weird, because it's like you want to do enough to keep things going, but you don't want to also get sucked into it. Do you have a question?
I'm still thinking of one. Go ahead.
Oh,
I'm
right.
just listening.
Right.
I'm having a great
so
time over here.
Musically, what have you done musically in terms of like your own personal music? What style? Is there places we can find it and listen to it and stuff like that?
I have that song, All Good Things, I re-recorded during the first lockdown and put a video out of it. So basically, somebody in the town started a little Facebook page where people could post videos of them performing covers and whatnot, and a friend of mine who's a real sort of, he's not like a natural musician, but he figures things out.
Yeah.
And he posted a song of him with an app where you stitch together videos of different parts of the song. So he's playing the drums, he's playing the guitar,
yeah,
and then he's playing the bass. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I was like, well, I could probably put something together like that. But with the loop pedal, it's all just one hit. So right. all of a sudden, I'm setting up cameras.
And, left and right.
And I'm working out how to record the audio direct into my laptop so that I can put good audio on top of the video.
Right.
And I did two things. I did a version of All Good Things, which is that song from Battle of the Bands with the glockenspiel. And I added, what was nice is it put me in a position where I could add extra things to it. So like I never took a piano out to the gig when I originally used to do it, but I've got one here in the studio. So yeah. I I'm terrible at theory, so I literally had to find a note that fitted and then
put numbers
come
on
up
it.
With chords.
This one first, second, third.
It's the Roy Clark Big Note Guitar Songbook.
And you know, obviously your listener can't see it, but there are Sharpie marks yeah. on the piano so that I got it right when I did the recording. And so yeah, I put that out, and then I did a joke song about COVID, basically complaining about the people overbuying stuff at the supermarket.
Nice.
And
nice.
actually doing some funny lyrics.
So you had the toilet paper shortage out there too then?
The toilet roll, yeah, and there is a toilet roll joke in there.
Nice.
Green screen was involved.
I'll have to check this
yeah,
out.
That's on Instagram too. And the funniest thing is that I managed to stitch in a clip. And I think I purposely wrote the song so that it fitted with the clip of Samuel L. Jackson doing the story on Late Night saying, stay the fuck at home.
Oh, nice.
So I sampled it and like spliced the video in. Totally illegal, but no,
yeah.
It's not like I've got a massive audience that's going to cause me a problem.
Right.
But musically, like I wish I was playing more because I do get a lot more out of it. And I forget that sometimes. Like there have been points in time when I was really stressed with my job.
Yeah.
And I've come in this room and played music and time has flown to
right,
the point where it's
right.
1 a.m. and my wife is in the doorway going, are you coming to bed today?
Right.
And, but I feel so relaxed.
Right.
As a result,
right.
Oh, and time moves at a different pace, and you don't realize the sun's coming up. You thought it was 8 o'clock at night; it's 8 a.m. And yeah, we've all been there.
Oh, honestly, like I guess the YouTube brain activity hack guys would call it a state of flow or whatever. But like it's when you're in that zone and you can be playing the same thing over and over and over
right.
again, but because you're in it. And you're wondering what else you can add to it. Time is just out the window. So.
All right. So actually, in that vein, are you going to be able to maintain this when quarantine is released and you go back to a day job? Are you ever going to go back to a day job? Or you're now worried about performing live and doing more comedy or going back to that? Are you going to have time for this, or is this just a COVID hobby for you right now?
No. This is it now. So basically. I am back at work now.
Oh, okay.
For the most part, we're working from home. So I'm doing a lot of my meetings and my sort of
working
sales
from
meetings.
Home. Yeah, yeah. I'm like that too. I'm working really hard from home. Yeah.
To varying degrees.
Yes.
I'm actually going through loads of stuff at the minute to try and get myself into a more work-like routine because if I can be more productive. See, like right now, because you've not got anyone breathing down your neck, you can potter and you can do a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Right, right.
Well, you got those
but
six guitars
actually,
behind you breathing down your neck
yeah.
when you're trying to work. I'm sure it's probably pretty tough to stay focused.
Yeah, well, I don't work in this room.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get anything done.
Play us. Yeah, that's why I don't work down here. I still work in my office upstairs.
Right.
Like, too many toys.
But right now, what I'm trying to do is get into a really productive sort of state of mind so that I can smash stuff out for 4 hours at the beginning of the day. And then I can do more of this stuff in the afternoon because I've done all the important work stuff
right.
rather than a bit of this and a bit of that. Like if you actually smash some stuff out and you do feel better for it because you've ticked a bunch of stuff off. So I'm in the middle of trying to get into that.
Gotcha.
Right now.
Gotcha.
But so yeah, I am back at work. there aren't any gigs. Gigs will be the thing that kind of that will impede it slightly, but I just won't be recording two episodes a week. I'll record one episode a week, and it'll be on a night when I don't have a gig because I'll have my schedule.
Or you can do what we do and schedule a day and then just schedule out a bunch of artists, you know, throughout the day and just knock it out. And then, like you said, have that bank to work with.
Yeah, and I have done that, but I've found I have to listen to the guest mixtape.
Oh, yeah.
So that I can...
engage.
I can form my own opinions and I can engage in the conversation. And sometimes you've got a guest that will do all the talking for you, and that's great. But I was knocking out a couple a day at one point, and I wasn't giving up enough time to their mixtape to really put my two cents in.
For sure.
So I would rather space it out a little bit so that I can have a genuine conversation.
That makes sense. Well, Michael, we're going to do something we do here on MOR that kind of ends the show, and we call it lightning round. I'm sure you've heard of something similar before.
Yes.
We're each going to take a turn just asking you some questions, first thought that comes to your head. We'll do two questions each, and then we're going to sign off. But we'll go ahead and start. We'll have Bram kick it off today.
All right, lightning round question number one.
Lightning.
This is also a fried question, too. How old would you be if you didn't know how old you are?
23.
Good.
Nice.
How old are you?
I'm 38.
Oh, all right. Yeah, all right. Nice. That's fair.
Yeah, he's held up well for 38.
Yeah, you've done good. You've
Ben
done
was
good.
38 right. 20 years ago.
Yeah. All right.
So my favorite questions always begin with, cursed by a gypsy woman you cut off in traffic one day. Whenever you walk in a room, this song starts playing. What song would you pick?
You Only Get What You Give by...
The New Radicals. New Radicals.
You Only Get What You...
All great right. band, great album. Dude, great I could go on for an hour about that band, but okay, well, I'll let it go.
It's not that long a show. Go ahead.
I know. God, it's unique that you find somebody that knows that band right. and appreciates that album. All right. If you had your own talk show... Who would be your first three guests?
Oh, man. Oh, okay. Billy Connolly, 20 years ago when he was still
yeah,
sharp.
Right.
My grandfather on my mother's side, because he died before I really got to know him, and apparently he was funny as fuck.
All right. Okay, that's a good one.
And who else? David Bowie, man.
For sure. That's a great one.
Be a tough one.
I watched recently where David Bowie gets interviewed by MTV, and he basically just trolls them because they don't play enough diverse music videos. This is like
so good.
It's so good. It's so uncomfortable, but it's so good.
there's a phenomenal clip of him being interviewed for Newsnight by a British journalist called Jeremy Paxman, and Jeremy Paxman is a bit of a bulldog. He's very snidey.
Okay.
And they're this is the infancy of the internet, and Paxman is writing it off like it's just a new delivery system, isn't it? That's all it is. And David Bowie's like, no, you don't get it. This is so much more. This is going to push humanity to its limits. It's going to come with all the best of us, and it's going to bring out the worst of us.
Right.
And he was the back and forth goes a couple of times, but it's unbelievable how perceptive he was at that point in time, because it's 20 something years ago.
Right.
And he predicts it all.
Yeah. That's wild. All right.
Yeah. All right. Lightning round question 17 or wherever we're at.
Great.
Your band is guaranteed to be a success if you do a cheesy reality show. Do you do it? And what is the show about?
I don't do it. I got offered this slot.
Hey.
There's a show in the UK called Come Dine With Me, where different people go to different people's houses and they mark their host out of 10 for like the meal. And part of it is they have to offer entertainment. And a friend of mine tried to book me and my music to be the entertainment. And my agent at the time was like, yeah, but what if they're a shit host? And then all that happens is the guests all rip into you as their entertainment. I was like, good point. Let's not do that.
Valid.
Nice. I'm pretty sure reality shows have the same connotation over there that they have over here as well. I think there's a, asked that of a UK guest before.
We'll ask him.
We'll worry about that. That's a topic for something else. All right, my question. Given you have a magic telephone and you can call anyone on this phone and ask them to do something and they will do it. So who do you call to book to as your new singing partner or new musical partner? If you could call anyone and they're guaranteed to do it.
I would call Donald Trump and tell him to walk into the sea.
Oh, no, I wanted to keep it music related, but that's good. We'll put that as a runner-up answer. I'd probably ask him to sing on an album with me as a duet. You know, write him a special song.
Oh, my God, can you imagine it? Okay, so if
he doesn't know the words of the national anthem.
Sunshine.
He doesn't know the words of the national anthem. What's he going to sing, you know? Anyway, sorry.
Okay, so if I was going to call anyone and they would agree to the collab, Dave Grohl, man.
Yeah, hands down.
He'd probably do it anyway if you called him. He's that nice a guy.
Because he looks, he's fun, man. Like, he's got comedic chops, and the stuff he did with that, Sandy Bushell, the young girl.
Those were great.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a good dude for that. And like when he gets people up on stage at festival gigs, he's got a really good sort of sense of humanity and inclusion for his fans. Yeah. So like I think he'd be so much fun to work with.
I think he has a list that just, what's the coolest thing I could do now? I'm doing that one.
Well, one of my favorite Foo Fighters stories was they played the garages of fans secret. They just did this garage tour, and they would just set up. The garage door would open and just be in that cul-de-sac, and they didn't promote it. They just filmed certain things and released it later. Huh. And I thought that was one of the coolest things.
Well, they were touring under an assumed name before they did the stadium thing. That might be the same tour.
It might have been.
And they played House of Vans in London, which as well for the UK, there were really strict sort of head count, and so we got to see the Foo Fighters in a tunnel, basically.
Oh, nice. Oh, cool.
And it was unbelievable.
I bet.
Very cool.
All right, last question, my friend. Question number 23. Most embarrassing moment as a musician on stage?
Most embarrassing... Okay, so I was opening for De La Soul in Leamington.
Nice.
Ooh.
And the thing is, like, with a loop pedal arrangement, like, you've got to nail the first loop, otherwise the rest of the song won't work.
Right.
And on this one song, I fucked it so badly. And it's, like... So I actually had to stop and go, guys, look, I'm really sorry. This is the biggest gig I've ever played. I need to nail this first loop or it won't work. And I want to do this properly for you guys. Is it cool with you if I start again? And luckily they were really behind it. And they were like, so they all yelled and told me to do it. But like in that moment, I was dying.
Paralysis.
You should never have to apologize to an audience mid-song. No, that would be bad.
Yeah.
Well, you've always, Darren, you've always said, don't apologize. Just pretend like it was part of the song. The audience may not even know.
Because I've seen Corkin do it before where he's like, I'm sorry, and then he'll start over. Yeah. He doesn't like ask permission.
We have a
like
good friend here in Indianapolis, Indiana, where we're located out of, named Matthew Corkin. And the man's a musical phenom, but he does very similar to the point that he actually has drums that like he'll start playing
he'll pick up a drum, hit it twice, do a tambourine, all that.
And so very similar. But we've seen him, you know, struggle with that before early on. Now, I mean, now when you see him do loose,
he's pretty polished now.
He's insanely polished. Yeah.
All right. You got a closing thoughts?
Yeah. No, thank you so much for being here. We really do appreciate it. I know that we just recently met, but I appreciate you taking the time and trusting us to do this interview. And it was a great interview. We learned a lot, and we'll definitely promote not only your podcast. Where can we find this podcast at?
If you just find me on Instagram, Mixtapes with Mike Podcast, the link in my bio will take you to whatever platform best suits your device. Okay. For your podcast, but it also links to my Spotify and Apple Music profile, so you can check out all the previous mixtapes if you're ever stuck for something to listen to. That's probably the best way to find it.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely push
need
that.
To do that.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Hopefully, we can chat again soon in the future. If you ever want us to make you a mixtape, I'm sure we would all take a lot of pleasure in that.
Sounds like
very diverse.
Very diverse.
I don't think we're big enough for his show.
No, probably not. But
he's slumming it to be our show.
No. Like the thing is, like it, when you talk to people, there's a local hero effect when you talk to someone. It's like one of my biggest, best performing episodes is with a guy called Grim, who is the local skate shop owner in a town in South Wales. And that got crazy numbers because he is loved within his scene.
That's right,
and
sure.
It's only one town.
Yeah.
You know, so it's sort of like, yeah, it's great to have guests with a bit of profile, but like sometimes some of the best conversations you can have is with just a normal person. Like the episode that comes out tomorrow for me is with one of my old music buddies because he's got an album that he wants to create this album to raise money for a mental health charity.
Oh, cool. So very cool.
That's a local story, and sometimes they can be more engaging than the people with profile. Like I've had conversations with famous people, and it's been like pulling teeth.
They probably are also restricted on what they can talk about as well.
Well, you never know. Yeah. Actually, there's a guy that I've spoke to who's from your neck of the woods. He's a guy called Ryan M. Brewer.
Yeah. He's one of our really good friends. Yeah. I've helped book shows. The Brewer,
he's done my show four times. Yes.
Yeah, that's
we
hilarious.
All know Ryan.
Yeah.
I was literally going to say you should talk to that guy.
He's the worst.
We can't get rid of him.
Yeah, we can't stand the guy.
Why am I not surprised that's what he said?
That's amazing. No, we'll definitely tag him on this episode too, so he knows that we chatted.
Amazing.
With you. So yeah, he's a good dude. He's a great dude. So, well, thank you so much again. Thank you for taking the time. And we'll definitely be checking out the podcast and following along. And we'll talk to you real soon, okay?
Thanks, man. You right. Take care, guys.
All right. Thanks
so much.
See you, buddy.
Bye, man.
All right. Bye. We're going to do that game again where I try to find the hang-up button and I can't. Whereas when we were talking to him, he was very easy to cut off for no apparent reason. And yeah.
Well, and that was Michael Drybra.
I like that guy.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. Thank you for tuning in this week. This is, of course, my dear friend, Mr. Darren Snyder.
Hello.
And my other dear friend, Bram Epstein.
I'm not paying for it.
That's fair. And we hope that you guys will tune in next week. Take care.
Peace.
But you can tell we don't know who the guest is yet?
Nah.
Sorry. All right.
They already know now. It's two episodes.